Hey, jock and or nerd. Thanks for joining us in episode 17 of the Jock and Nerd Podcast. Our guest today is Danielle Moses. Now, Danielle works for my wife, Jessie, with my wife, I should say. And through just a couple of conversations, I discovered that she's a fellow geek. Can I say that, Danielle? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
All right, she's a fellow geek. Danielle works for a company called the Imaginarium Agency, who runs the Indiana Comic-Con, Tampa Bay Comic-Con. She runs panels, and I was like, you know what? You got to be on the show, and here she is. Let's all get to meet her together, shall we?
It's the Jockey Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Anthony and Imran.
Jockey Nerd! Hi, my name's Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he's the nerd.
Thank you for joining us today in the studio for this episode of Jock and Nerd Podcast. We have a very special guest, but before we start, I got to explain, the jock has been feeling a little bit under the weather lately. How you feeling, Anthony?
I think I'm on the incline now. I'm coming back to full strength, but not 100%.
All right, well, drink a lot of fluids. Now, being the responsible podcasters that we are, we didn't want to expose anyone and get, we have a guest today. We didn't want to get her sick. So,
no.
I have sequestered the jock deep in a bunker, way underground, under the island of Lian Yu.
It's lonely down here.
Do you watch Arrow, Danielle?
No, I need to.
All right, so this is how geeky we are. She didn't get that reference.
It's okay. People will get that reference because I am sitting next to Slade Wilson now.
Yeah, how's Slade doing? You can lick Deathstroke on the face, cough all over him. I think
Ollie would appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, Team Arrow, you'd be helping him out.
Yeah, I'm hand in hand with Mr. Slade Wilson right now. It's not working though because he's got all the Mirakuru, I think, still running through his vein.
Oh God, we are such nerds. Anyways,
we're lame, dude. We're lame.
Dude. All right, let's just start with that one. Danielle, thank you for joining us in the studio.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, usually there's a third person, and he's not here. And there's a fourth person, which is the listener. So everyone is excited to hear from you. Now we just kind of met, like. You just started working with my wife, and I don't even know you that well, but I was showing her how to, like, update their website that I'd set up, and then it turns out that she does all these cool things.
What's with you letting in strangers in your house, Imran?
It happens all the time.
Like the third or fourth guest that you don't know anyone at all.
Anthony's brought over, like, guests, and I'm like, don't even – just bring them over, and don't even introduce them until I start pressing record. So I've met these people on the show, and I love just meeting random, interesting people.
Well, you have Joplin to take care of you, so it's fine.
Yeah, Jop will protect. And if, like, they don't pass the Joplin test, then right back out the door.
Yeah, downstairs.
So Danielle works for this company. It's a really cool company called the Imaginarium Agency. And it sounds like a design agency, but it's not a design agency.
No, although I think they'd like to add some kind of advertising element, but that's way down the road. Right now, we just host conventions.
That's awesome. Two big ones.
Yes. Indiana Comic-Con is up and coming. We actually had a really great turnout back in March, but our big winner right now is the Tampa Bay Comic-Con. We've been in Tampa, I think, 4 years? I just joined in 2013.
Wow.
Oh, is the Imaginarium that you work for, does that have anything to do with that movie, The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus's?
No, not even a little. I don't.
Not even a little bit? Do you even know what movie that is?
I do. I've seen part of it.
Heath Ledger's last movie?
That's the Terry Gilliam. Heath Ledger was filming that, wasn't he?
Yeah, when he passed away.
I haven't seen that, and I really wanted to see it. I heard it's pretty cool.
I heard it's really trippy because they've got like four actors playing Heath Ledger's character. Whoa.
And it's Terry Gilliam is just a trippy director.
Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah, you gotta love. I mean, if you're into Monty Python at all.
I'm sorry for derailing your thought there.
No, it's totally
I had to say that.
No, we get a lot of that. They're like, so you, it was like, are you affiliated with Disney or what? And it's like, no, I don't know why they chose that name. We used to be called Action 3.
Okay.
And they changed it like a year ago. I think it's a better name.
Yeah.
I like Imaginarium better.
Yeah, it's a little more fanciful.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more descriptive.
Yeah, just a bit.
Just a bit. But you said Tampa Bay is coming up, right?
Yes, so Tampa Bay is end of July.
And you're going to go down there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course you have to go down there. That's awesome.
Yeah, I got to be there. They're flying me in.
How long do you like start working? Do you like work all year round for these things?
No. Well, yes and no. We only do two events a year right now.
Right.
But as soon as one event ends, we start pre-production for the next event.
Okay.
So we start looking at talent. We start talking about how to improve. I start making floor plans and getting with the venue guys and all the boring stuff.
But they're flying you out. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's great. I'm from Florida, so it's kind of a nice way to, they let me stay for a whole week. So I get to see family while I'm down there and do the convention.
Oh, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. That works out really well. You got some pretty cool guests coming out. I was looking at the website. Carrie Fisher, of course, Princess Leia from Star Wars. Billy West, who does all the voices everywhere, Futurama, Ren and Stimpy.
All the way back to Doug.
Oh, yeah, he started with Doug. Dude, the guy is a big voice name.
Mm-hmm. He's fantastic. We had him in Indianapolis, and he's a doll.
I would love to hang out with him. He just seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's super cool.
Freema Agamon, did I say that right?
I think so.
She's from Doctor Who, which I'm not really a big Doctor Who fan, but I understand and I know the Doctor Who culture. I'm more of a fan of that.
Color Patch.
Yeah, he isn't in Doctor Who.
Bandicoot Cabbage Patch?
Benedict Cumberbatch is in Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, don't listen to that's why he's the jock.
No, I watch both. It's fine.
All right, so you're good. Yeah. I love Sherlock. I'm more familiar with like the community TV show version of Doctor Who, which is, what is that called? Have you seen that?
Doctor Spacetime.
Yes, Doctor Spacetime rules.
Yeah, they're good. I got to listen to a Q&A with Abed.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Because he used to go to Second City. So he came back, did a talk back recently. He loves being on that show. Rightfully so.
Yeah. I haven't caught up on the sixth season on Yahoo yet. I think it's done. And I think they had a dig at like Marvel superhero movies in the season finale. I haven't watched it.
I haven't caught the finale yet.
Yeah. It's weird that it's on Yahoo. It's like, but it still came out every Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like in between like a Netflix and like actually being on TV.
Yeah, and I wasn't going to continue watching it. Not that I stopped loving it. I was like, I don't really feel like downloading this. And then I found out a buddy of mine from college had a small part on an episode. So I was like, all right, I have to go watch the season.
Oh, wow. In the sixth season.
Yeah. He was Domingo
in
the episode where I don't want to spoil anything, but there's an episode, there's a character named Domingo. My buddy.
I'm going to look out for that. I got to go watch that.
I was going to say, she can spoil whatever she wants. We spoil everything all the time.
This is a full spoiler show, by the way.
This is a full spoiler podcast.
People come in knowing that. Hopefully they do by now, 17 episodes in. If you don't, listener, and it's your first time, we spoil the shit out of everything. So.
But that's very considerate of you, though, to not spoil.
Well, I have to go actually be in a room with fans that might kill me if I spoil something for them.
Gotcha.
So. Oh, it's more of a self-protection thing.
It is.
I got you. We don't want her shanked now, Anthony, so...
Yeah, she has some integrity to uphold, so I see. She can. I respect that.
Yeah, you spoil away, but if I get to Florida and I've got people trying to kill me, well, I can't do my job.
Dude, especially in Florida. Don't even get me started on the state of Florida. But going back to this.
Wow. Right. You know she's from Florida, right? Well, this is our bad. This is the thing. We always insult our guests.
No, it's fine. I left voluntarily.
Okay, she's there you go. There now. All that's I know is true. Look up the Twitter account Florida Man and you'll understand what I'm saying. Back to the celebrities, though. Ian Glenn from Game of Thrones, Jenna Malone from The Hunger Games, and Matt Ryan, Constantine himself. I loved him as Constantine.
I haven't gotten around to it yet because I'm super behind in my shows, but I've heard good things. I mean to watch that. I mean to watch Daredevil. I mean to watch Arrow.
Yeah, Daredevil is awesome. Here's the thing with Constantine. I think it's officially dead now. It was, and it's kind of sad. I was hoping somebody would pick it up.
Us too, because we booked him before they canceled it.
Oh, well, he'll have a lie. He'll be like, all right, I'll tell you what I really think now. So now he can really just talk freely.
A farewell tour.
Well, there are shows that have been canceled, and those actors still tour successfully through conventions all the time.
Well, that's like most of the people there are just reliving their youth. I met, Lou Ferrigno. I think to this day, every year, he's there selling pictures of himself as the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, he was at C2E2.
He's at everyone for 20 years. This is all. This is how he makes his money. It's one poster and signature at a time, I guess.
No, whatever works. I saw him at MegaCon in Florida. Yeah. Came home, saw him at C2E2 2 weeks later.
Him and fucking Butch Patrick from the Munsters? They're always at everything. And then like...
Isn't there like Landau from Star Wars? Isn't he at everything too? Is that a guy?
You mean Billy Dee Williams? Lando Calrissian?
Yeah, he's always at conventions.
Well, you get the third tier Star Trek people are always there too. But it's good. You get to like, at that point,
weird pro wrestlers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just, it's so random. I love the guests there. How did you get started working with them?
Well, I was working at Universal Studios. So I went to Orlando for college, stayed because I didn't know what to do with myself. So I was working, broke out of my mind, and my friend worked for this company and said, hey, do you want to come make a couple $100? We need some people to sell tickets, answer questions. I'm like, yeah, why not? Free convention weekend. And long story short, some things went terribly, terribly wrong. Ooh. And I'm a kind of take over and make things better personality. So my friend was with me and he's very, very similar. So we just kind of took over the department and we're like, no, 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 this isn't working. Fix this. All right, you people line up here. Let me answer your questions. All right, you were having a problem with the printer. Well, this is how we fix it. And by Sunday, they offered to have me back. So I got an assistant position for this department. When the former manager left, they offered me the promotion, and here I am.
Nice. The way to take charge. Listen, 2 years, you're going to be running the whole goddamn thing the way you're going.
That is the plan.
Yeah, take over.
There is no middle management in your future.
Don't tell my show manager that. We all love him.
Oh, shit. So what do you do the hosting panels I want to get to, and you run star signings?
I do, which means I take it from day one. They tell me who we're trying to book, who we have confirmed booked. I get with the convention planners and the decorators to set up the floor plan. I start working with our travel team to figure out what kind of amenities they may need or what kind of scheduling restrictions they have in their contracts. And then, of course, the weekend of the actual show, I get the fun. I get them there, make sure they're happy. I get to line fans up and tell them, please don't ask Billy West to say, shut up and take my money. So it's a lot of customer service, but a lot of interaction with really cool people that I admire.
Any interesting stories with celebrities you've had to deal with over there, or anything you want to share?
We had, what's his name? I love him. We had Rory McCann, the Hound from Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay.
He's been with us. He's come to 3 different shows now, and we brought him back for Indianapolis this past March. And we always, as a courtesy, invite the actors to come out to our company dinners because, you know, they're in a place, they don't know people, maybe sometimes they'll have a friend with them, usually their agent, and they're all alone in a weird city. Well, he actually took us up on it and came out drinking with us. Really wonderful, nice man. And we found out that he lives on an island off of Scotland.
Wow.
And there are about 8 year-round residents of the island.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we were just drinking and talking with him about sailing and living, and there's a nudist colony on the island part of the year, and he's just, you know, with the great Scottish accent, really nice guy.
That's got to be so much fun, like just a drunk Scot telling you about his island life.
Yeah,
I could just listen to a Scottish guy talk all day like that.
Yeah, they could read the phone book. Yeah. I love that accent.
Yeah. Well, and Rory just has a great sense of humor, and there was no sense of I'm famous and you're not kind of thing. He was just really nice guy.
Down to earth.
Very much so, yeah.
That's always important. You find anyone maybe the opposite of that?
You would like to share?
You're trying to get me fired?
No, I'm just saying, you know, some people have more
temperamental.
All right, never mind.
No, by and large, the people that we've worked with have been very, very nice. They're really eager to meet their fans. They're very grateful that they get to do what they do. So I haven't met anyone that I've, you know, walked away and been like, well, I'm never watching that show again.
Well, that's good.
It's never happened.
That's good. And you're hosting 2 panels.
Yes.
Wow. Tell us about that. And you apparently you have a little online identity.
Yeah.
And then that's how you're hosting these panels. Is that not correct?
It is correct.
All right.
I actually normally host the panels as Flea.
Yeah.
Because despite the fact that my name's all over the place, I just don't like to be me when I host the panels.
You're the drummer from the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yes.
That she is. Have you ever seen them in the same room together? I don't think so. Well, that's awesome, though. But it gives people, you know, a really good way to connect with you. And I love that you just have, like, a nickname. That's great.
Yeah, it stems from being in high school and thinking that I was clever when I made up the screen name.
And it just stuck.
You're it just kind of stuck.
Yeah, it's nice. A brand longevity. You can't change it now.
No, we can't.
Yeah. So what kind of panels? Like, what do you guys do with these panels?
Well, if you've ever been to a convention, you know, a panelist submits a topic, whatever they feel like talking about, and they get 50 minutes or something. You can apply for 90 minutes, but mine are 50. And I kind of fell into it the same way I fell into the job. My friend runs panels and was like, hey, we need to fill some space. So last year at Tampa, I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And so I decided to host 2. One about Harry Potter, because I'm a nut for Harry Potter, and I was working at Wizarding World at the time. And then the other about pansexuality, because I think it's a very underrepresented part of the LGBT spectrum.
Yeah.
So I...
What is pans? I don't even know what that is.
Pansexual. It's called pansexual. It can be called omnisexual. It's basically the a person is attracted to a personality rather than a gender or gender construct or have you, or a sex.
It's like every sex. It's like all sexual.
Yeah, it's just all about the person rather than the gender. Gender and physical, genitals have no bearing whatsoever on it.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
It's just connecting with someone.
Exactly.
Despite, anything else.
Yeah, actually the first one was about my belief that Captain Jack Harkness from Doctor Who is actually a pansexual rather than a bisexual. It's very
cool. I thought that used to be called making friends. They don't call it that anymore?
No. What's the difference, I would say? Is it you get sexual with your friends?
Well, it's the element of attraction, really.
It's attraction.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to it, but like pansexual is like you can be attracted to any, like Jack, any race, species, gender.
See. Yeah.
And then there's panromantic, where you may only be attracted to a gender or two genders, but you can feel love or, an emotional attachment to any person.
Oh, so panromantic is some like basically what more humans with morals have, right? Are.
Not necessarily. That's actually part of the panel, is trying to debunk the whole pansexuals or sexual deviants kind of thing.
Oh, I didn't. That's not what I was implying.
Oh, okay.
I was saying like panromantic, my friend who might be African American. I could have love for them or that person, but not be romantically involved. Am I getting that right? I don't even know what I'm talking about.
You're still talking about friendship.
Not friendship either.
No, that's panromantic would be the, like, all right, how's the best way to describe this? Because I'm still learning. My panels are always changing. Yeah. So like a pansexual, you can feel a sexual attraction toward anybody.
Okay.
Regardless of all the bits and pieces and gender identity. Panromantic attractions, you may not necessarily be sexually attracted to that person, but you can be romantically attracted to them in a like a purely emotional way, if that makes sense.
Yep, I get it now.
I guess these things would come up a lot in a lot of fantasy and sci-fi fiction.
Yeah, that's right? Why I host
that's
them.
Where it would all come out. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, we get to talk about a variety of characters. Deadpool comes up. Because he's technically a pan or omnisexual.
Oh, yeah. There you go. See, Anthony?
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, technically, it's a good point. I mean, he married
Men in the comics?
He likes everything.
Well, he married a she-devil vampire who's like a demon. So that's pansexuality right there.
Oh, yeah.
In action.
That's true. And oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
And he's a good example of the closer to the sexually deviant side of things.
Well, that's true.
Is a Scarlet Witch pansexual or panromantic? She likes a robot.
You know, I'm not sure because I'm not super familiar with Scarlet Witch. I haven't looked into her.
She likes the Vision.
The who's Vision. She had a
robot.
He's
not really a human. So
yeah, I know. Paul Bettany. I know he's from the comics, but I enjoy Paul Bettany.
Yeah, they hopefully they do that in the movies, but yeah, they have a long romance, Scarlet Witch and the Vision
fantastic.
The history of X-Men comic books, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, does the Vision technically have a gender? Because then that would totally be pansexuality.
Well, he had no parts.
He has no parts.
He was smooth like a Ken doll when he stepped out of that fucking thing.
That is
He's got
true.
A lot of male characteristics, but I wouldn't say he's a male.
That is a good question, because why is he modeled? He should be like an asexual looking being. Because
Ultron created him.
I mean, I had, how can you, the first thing you see him naked, how are you not going to be like, okay, what does he have? And you're like, oh, he's like a Ken doll.
Yeah.
He's got nothing down there.
I guess the best way to go about it would just be to ask him, what kind of pronoun do you prefer? He, she, they?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
You start figuring it out a little bit at a time.
Exactly.
How many people you get at these panels usually?
Usually between 30 and 50 so far. This will be my third year doing it, so maybe the turnout will be bigger.
Do you enjoy this more than like actually setting up and doing all the planning of the whole show? Like, would you rather just do like focus on your panels?
No, well, the actor part of me would, because I enjoy talking.
Yeah.
And I enjoy connecting with people, but I feel like one wouldn't be as rich without the other. I work really, really hard all day. We're there from Wednesday. The show doesn't start till Friday. You're there from like 6 in the morning until whenever you're done at night. But after working that whole day, I get to go talk and connect with the people at the con and see how they're doing, see what they're feeling about things, and then talk about cool stuff. So it's a nice give and take.
Yeah. I mean, that the other part of the job, you're doing like 5 jobs at once.
Well, I have 2 assistants.
That's good.
that's good.
Yeah, I need them.
But listener, if you live near the Tampa Bay area around July 31st to August 2nd, check it out at the Tampa Convention Center. I'll put a link in the show notes to the website, jockandnerd.com/ 17. But I'm just curious about, like, is it crazy hectic? Like, looking at the logistics when you go to a comic book convention, I'm like, this has to be a nightmare. And clearly, like, the larger ones, like C2E2, do you go to these larger ones and pick up tips, or?
I do, actually. Yeah. That's exactly what I do.
Do you hope, is that the goal for you guys to be, like, that big? Or you guys just want to do things your way, the right way, and be unique?
I think the two gentlemen who are fantastic that own Imaginarium, I think they would like to be the power on this coast.
Which
they would have Dragon Con to contend with over that way. But
that's in Florida?
It's in Atlanta. Atlanta. It's kind of the biggest con that side of the country.
That's just sci-fi?
No, Dragon Con covers everything. They're enormous.
Really?
Yeah. So they're like the San Diego Comic Con of like the South?
Kind of. I've heard them compared to Comic Con.
So that would be the biggest Comic Con in that region of the country, mm-hmm. I guess. Because you have like San Diego over there. You got C2E2 here. You got New York, which is actually, I heard, did not do as well this year.
Unfortunately.
And then Florida, you guys, it's ripe. You guys should step in and take down...
Take that shit.
Yeah, take down Dragon Con. We're coming after you.
Slay the dragon.
Well, we have MegaCon in Orlando, which is a big deal for Orlando. It's pretty sizable. I went this year. I got very lucky and flew down. But I don't know. I don't know if they want to overtake them. I think if all the cons just live in harmony, you know.
Yeah.
Grow together.
And then you have a lot of great comic book artists coming out. What publishers represent at Tampa Bay?
Tons. We've had all kinds of guys. I wish I had the list in front of me because it's huge.
Oh, I bet we could just link it up here.
Yeah, it's on the front page of the website. But we've had all kinds of people. I mean, we had Bob Camp a few times, and he's amazing. He's one of the lead artists, I think, from Ren and Stimpy, among other things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was delightful. We've got Jim Steranko comes to most of our cons.
Jim Steranko is great.
Yeah. Oh, there they are.
Mark Wade, Neil Adams. I mean,
those are some big names.
These are big gets. Simon Beisley. I love Simon Beisley. I'm not familiar with some of these other ones.
We have some smaller, some bigger.
Joe Jusko, I'm familiar with him. He's great.
Bob Layton, I just saw at C2E2. Oh, yeah. I had him sign some stuff.
Kevin Maguire, funny story. I'm Facebook friends with Kevin Maguire through connections that I went to art school with in New York who were Facebook friends with him. And then I just like requested, and he approved it because I think he saw, I was like, oh, you're friends with these guys. I don't know him, but I was like, dude, this guy's awesome, and he's really good.
Yeah, his stuff's great.
Like, I always see that on the Facebook page, that this little Justice League shot right here. So I was like, oh, Kevin Maguire, he's a Facebook buddy. I wanted to ask your opinion on this little news story that came out. It's a rumor. I don't know if you heard this. Marvel seems to be skipping San Diego, and people are saying it's because they're afraid of Warner Brothers / DC's slate of upcoming movies. Meaning DC is ready to blow out, you know, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, and Suicide Squad. People have speculated that they're afraid Marvel doesn't want to compete.
I got an opinion on that, but we can let her start.
What do you think? Do you think it's a thing, or people are just making this up?
I think people are just making it up. And this is just one woman's opinion.
Yeah.
It's the correct opinion.
I think Marvel's been killing it. And from all of the promo stuff that I've seen for DC, and this is someone who grew up on Batman and didn't convert to Marvel until...
Oh, you're a DC girl. We're going to get into that. Yeah. Okay.
But I've been very disappointed with their turnout in the last couple of years. Everything they're pushing out.
Marvel's.
No, DC's. I'm very happy with Marvel.
Yeah. They have been killing it. Anthony?
Yeah, that's complete BS. Marvel had, like she said, Marvel's been killing it. Marvel doesn't need San Diego Comic-Con anymore. They ran that Phase 3 event on like a random Tuesday at 10 a.m. in L.A.
Oh, that's right.
They don't need Comic-Con. They don't need San Diego Comic-Con anymore. They've already blown it out so many times. There's no pressure on them to top themselves. They don't want to hit the deadline for San Diego Comic-Con because they don't want to rush anything. They can easily push it back to August to the Disney event. I think it's like D3 Expo in August.
D23, that's what people were saying.
They can just run it then, or they can just set up their own event on a random Tuesday again at 11 a.m. and they can do their own event. They don't need to prove anything to anyone. DC is the ones that need to prove anything, prove themselves. So I don't see Marvel looking at DC like, oh, I'm scared that DC is going to come out with all these great movies and blow out everything out of the water. DC's track record right now has been terrible outside of Nolan Batman films.
Yeah, they really need this. I mean, I tend to agree. Could this also be Disney going, yeah, we're going to hold back. I mean, you're right. Marvel is a media powerhouse. They can hold their own press conference and they will get all the attention regardless of where they are. It's possible. I read another article that said the last time they skipped was 2011 when they really had nothing to show. So basically, they don't have anything to show right now.
That was the con I went to, which really sucked.
Oh, you went when they weren't there. I mean,
when they weren't there, yeah.
So it's like in between phases. Like they're filming Captain America now. They, I think you're right. Like, they don't have anything big they need to announce at this point. They don't need to waste their time. Now,
there's a lot of theories, too, that, like, the reason why the studios go to, like, the con or whatever, or San Diego Comic-Con, and blow out their movies and show exclusive footage is they want to build hype. But there's a lot of theories that this hype doesn't actually carry over into dollars for their movies. So a lot of big studios aren't seeing a return on sending all their actors and rushing footage out a year early, and there's no ROI on that. The ROI isn't the greatest on that to a lot of these studios.
That is interesting. And yeah, Warner Brothers has a lot to prove. They have a lot of risky shit that they're doing, and they need it to hit, and they're kind of scrambling to catch up.
Yeah I mean, after Man of Steel, which I got very excited for, went to the midnight premiere, I'm just not, you know, not like waiting and with bated breath for their next project.
What did you think of Man of Steel?
Good God, why?
Oh my God, see, I liked it already.
No, I was so upset. I was, you know, I was really trying because the actors were really trying and it was visually
it's
very...
not the actor's fault?
Nope, it never is. No. Well, that's not true. Sometimes it is.
And now, wait, you're saying visually, it's awesome, right? If you turn off the sound and remove all of the dialogue scenes, it looks great.
Yeah, and then remove the part where, you know, he kills.
Yeah, when he didn't, yeah. No, both Anthony and I, you know, we agree on this, that Zack Snyder, as a director, is not good with working with people. Like, he cannot pull out performances. There's no heart to any of his movies. They're fucking flat.
Yeah.
It looks awesome. It looks like a comic book, which, and I've said this time and time again, why isn't he just the VFX supervisor on the movie? Fucking get someone else to direct the people.
Like maybe Joss Whedon.
Yes. Can you imagine Whedon directing with Zack's level of detail to,
oh
my God. But that's why I'm really nervous about Batman versus Superman. I think he's going to fuck it up. Like, so far, I love the suit. I almost love the suit better than the Nolan suit.
I'm on the fence because I love Frank Miller.
Yeah.
Love his stuff. I was never a fan of the stumpy-eared Batman design.
Yeah.
But I can get behind it because of how great DKR was.
Yeah, you like the long-eared Bernie Wrightson style.
I do. Well, I grew up on Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah. He had kind of longer, pointy. Yeah. So you've read Dark Knight, obviously?
Yeah, not all of it. I'm poor.
Oh, I'll let you borrow my copy.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, there's also, I have an awesome leather-bound copy. It has The Dark Knight Returns and Year One.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. I've read Year One.
Year One's awesome.
Yeah. And I've got Hush at home. I've got the Long
Hush
Halloween.
Hush is great. Hush, yeah, is amazing. Anthony turned me on to Hush. Like, I had stopped reading comic books, and then because of him, I started. And then he's like, oh, you have to read this. And I was like, oh, shit, Hush is great.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Listener, I will put links to everything we mentioned in the show notes. So, hey, if you want to purchase them, it'll be a little handy Amazon link, and we get a couple of pennies. And
Danielle, what do you think of Batfleck?
I think that I'm making the right choice and giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I, you know, he's been good in things before. And, you know, if I were cast in something that was outside my type, I would want people to give me the chance.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he has the potential to be really good. We don't know. Yeah. We haven't seen anything.
Yeah.
It's just rough with to trust Snyder after Man of Steel. I mean, that it wasn't terrible. It wasn't exactly a Superman film. And like Imran mentioned, it was really flat.
Yeah, exactly.
And over the top, like having Superman sit in church with a shot behind him of Jesus asking if like he's the one or if like whatever, and then like that's just beating you over the head with the imagery of Superman being Jesus. Like, we all know that Superman is kind of Jesus.
We get it. We enough.
See him falling out of a plane with like hands out in the air like he's on the cross either. Like, what the hell?
Well, it feels like they're kind of going to be beating us over the head with that some more in the next film, because I saw the preview and I'm like,
oh, there's major God complex shit going on. Right? People are like worshiping him.
Yeah. Which I got through the first movie by just going, shirtless. So
Dude, Henry Cavill is good, though. He's perfect for the role. Now, if they could take, like, there's got to be a little bit of joy in these fucking movies.
Yeah, that's really the problem.
Like, just think of the first Superman movie with Christopher Reeves. Granted, it was the late 70s. That is a great fucking superhero movie. It has heart. It has drama. You care about Chris Reeves. He plays Superman so well that you just want to hug him. Like, you just look at him and you instantly trust him.
Yeah,
Superman. Is that the one where he flies around the world?
Yeah. He reverses time and
that was a weird deuce ex.
Pulls. Yeah. Well,
I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, it's look, fine.
Again, we had nothing. That was like the first major superhero movie, you know, to be huge.
Yeah.
And I think it still holds up to this day.
It's been probably a decade since I watched it, but from what I remember,
I always love the where the kid falls into Niagara Falls scene, and then I don't know why I always love that. Because that kid annoyed me.
You wanted the kid to die?
I think I did. Or I think I went, and then I think when we went to Niagara Falls with my family, like, for a second I wanted to do that.
You wanted to fall and have Superman catch you?
Yes. Like yes. I think that's what I wanted.
Weirdo.
I mean, it had great lines, like, remember when the helicopter and it drops and he grabs Lois and he's like, don't worry, miss, I got you. And she's like, you got me? Who's got you? Like, you never saw that shit before. It was so good.
Well, and it's hard to get that nowadays because everyone's all about the gritty superhero movie. But that's part of Batman. Huh. It's part of Superman's charm is he's a Boy Scout. Yes. He's sweet, you know? He's a good foil for the dark, gritty Batman.
Ironically, it's one of the reasons where I can't stand the character reading his comic books. Because he is the Boy Scout, and it's always the same shit. Like, I'm sorry, I've given it a chance with the New 52. I read all... I can't care. I don't care.
Yeah. I never read any of his stuff. Just my best friend is totally Superman camp. I'm totally Batman camp, and we've just left it.
I mean,
what they need to do is look at Chris Evans' performance as Captain America.
Yeah,
and just be like, hey, Henry Cavill, just act like that guy.
Exactly.
That would work. I mean, that is the character equivalent across the two publishers.
And funnily enough, during Captain America, the First Avenger, they had a kid gets thrown into the peril in the water scene. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
And he looks over the edge and the kid's like, go get him. I can swim. It's my favorite.
That was an awesome scene.
That's a great movie. Those two movies are really good.
They're delightful. And they're super underrated. Everyone I talk to is like, Captain America, Thor. And I'm like, shut up. Marvel's killing it.
Yeah. No, I think we think Winter Soldier is better than Age of Ultron a little bit.
Oh, I loved Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah. Have you seen Age of Ultron?
Yes.
Yeah. What'd you think of that?
I actually quite enjoyed it. The parts that weren't as great weren't terrible, and the parts that were great were really great, which is a Joss Whedon characteristic.
And I was going to say, you are a big fan of the Whedonverse, aren't you?
Enormous.
Yeah. I mean, the problem I had with that movie is that they needed more Whedon in the movie. There was too much shit going out, and they had to sacrifice the Whedonism.
They needed more time, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With even though the movie was, what, like 220? They still needed more time.
And I would have watched a four-hour movie.
Yes, that's exactly what I said walking out. I was like, this movie should have been twice as long, and it would have still kept my attention. Fill it in with Joss Whedon characters so that we love these guys even more. And I know he was itching to do it, and I bet he's had it written down. But like the first Avengers movie, I mean, that movie was epic. I don't know if you can reproduce that again.
Yeah, Danielle. A little lightning in a bottle thing. Yes.
Question for you. Since you are a Whedon girl... or person.
Mm-hmm.
what did you think of all the criticism you got after Age of Ultron for how he portrayed Black Widow and Hulk in that relationship? Are you aware of all that?
I caught snippets of it on Reddit and on Tumblr, I'm ashamed to say. But, you know, it didn't even register with me that it might be a problem for people because I know that he's such a proponent of women's rights and he's such a feminist. And
I mean, he writes the strongest goddamn female characters, the leads in his project.
Yeah. So it didn't even register with me. And then I got online. I'm like, oh, they're catching flack for this. I thought it was cute. I mean, I didn't care to add a romance element, but I didn't mind it at all.
Yeah. I mean,
I think he got flack for that. And then like, her being like the damsel in distress sort of when she got captured and put in jail, in Ultron jail. But I didn't see that as being her being in damsel in distress either. So
no, I just saw it as sometimes shit happens.
Yeah.
Right.
Even to the best, you know? And she is the best.
Yeah. I mean, she clearly knows, you know, he's written her like she knows how to use her feminine wiles, but she'll fucking kick the shit out of you in a second.
Oh, yeah. And she's the one of the only appropriately dressed heroines that we have
yeah.
right now.
Yeah. I mean, we've said, you know, we've said it in other shows, Marvel's women are so well written compared to like the CW DC shows.
Oh, yeah.
They can learn from Marvel, like Agent Carter, you know, so Black Widow, you have Sky and May. Like, these are all strong, kick-ass women, and it's great. And Marvel's going to do Captain Marvel.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I heard some rumors about maybe they're looking at Angelina Jolie to direct. I was like, that's crazy. That'll be awesome.
Really?
Yeah. Yes, she wants to move into directing.
Yeah.
Which I think is great.
Well, she did that. Have you seen her in one movie? Unbroken?
No, not
that
yet.
War movie, yeah.
I've been so broke since I spent all my money moving to Chicago that I only spend on what's really, really important. Like,
what's necessary.
I had no job, but I went to see Ultron.
See, that's necessary. You have your priorities straight. That is a good geek. I like that.
But, and you know, meanwhile, I just saw some promo photos for DC's Wonder Woman. I think, is DC controlling that?
Yeah.
Yep.
And there were two side-by-side photos, and one looked like a cheap Halloween costume, and the other one looked beautiful. And the one that looked like a cheap Halloween costume was the costume. Ugh. And the other one was a porn parody.
Oh, my God.
I was so upset.
Oh, no.
Oh, shit. The porn parody got it way more right. Listen, Warner Brothers, are you listening? This should tell you something. Really, we keep saying DC, but really, this battle is Marvel versus Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Right. DC does not have their shit together like Marvel does, which may be part of the battle.
Well, there's no one guy running DC's movies. It's a like a committee, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I mean, the way they're doing their scripts, like I heard for Aquaman, they're like they're having like six or seven screenwriters write their script, and then whoever has the best one is gonna get the movie. Mm-hmm. But then like some of these execs will what'll probably end up happening is they'll take elements from each script and combine them into one movie, and that's just not how you make a good movie at all.
Ugh. Let me ask you guys this question, because I was listening to Fat Man on Batman today, which is Kevin Smith's awesome podcast, and he was geeking out over, we're going to get to see an Aquaman with Jason Momoa. It's going to be awesome. And I think, is that James Wan is directing that one?
That's correct. The latest Fast and Furious movie.
Director. Now, how do you film people having a conversation completely underwater? Now, think about all the times we have seen Aquaman. In the comic book, they're just conversing. Word bubbles, no problem. In the cartoons, they're just talking like they're in the air. How would you film a conversation with a species of people who live underwater? It's been bugging me all fucking day. I'm like, do you do it telepathically? Do you just make it sound like they're not underwater? Do they go in a bubble city and then there's an atmosphere?
Yeah, you know what? I should have asked Jason. We had him in Indianapolis.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. Listen, send him a tweet or something.
Is he a big dude?
He's huge.
Really?
Oh, my God. He's tall and big, buff. And he was working out two or three times a day for Aquaman while we had him.
Wow.
So he was just ripped the whole... I'm like, dude, because I saw him in 2013, right after Khal Drogo kicked it.
Yeah.
And then I saw him again, you know, a couple months ago, and I was like, looking good, Jason. Looking like Aquaman.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I like the way they're going with it. You know, do something different. I love the whole Samoan tattoos. He looks like a warrior. He does look like royalty. You know, by all means, do something fun. Let's see something different. He doesn't have to wear the fucking orange and green tights and be blonde. But how are these people fucking talking to each other?
You know what? I bet he'll just shout Dothraki style and it'll just work.
Anthony, what do you think? Like, how do you imagine this in your head?
I mean, there was a couple thoughts, like a bubble city where there's like atmosphere inside, or
that's the cop out though. That's the cheap cop out way.
The only other way I see it is like telepathically, you know, because you physically cannot like get a mic underwater and talk and it be loud enough.
This is the only reason I want to see this movie is think about. You know, Kevin Smith even mentioned, he's like, we've never seen this. Like, the only place we've seen it is in fucking Little Mermaid. Technically, and Splash, where they went down at the end of the movie, but they
wasn't there like a movie Water World or
something? Yeah, but that was on top of the water.
Well, yeah, anytime they were under the water, they had the kind of air bubble pocket things.
Kevin Costner did have gills, so he could have talked.
Yeah.
But, man, someone has to have to come up with a really creative solution for showing people talking underwater.
I'd love it.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I'd love it if the first scene where they went underwater and tried to talk, someone just kind of opened their mouth and it went blah, 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 blah.
And they just start choking and they die and they float away. And then they look, these guys look at each other and they're like, don't do that.
I mean, it's physically impossible. The sound clarity, it's physically impossible for it to be the same.
It's physically impossible for people to live and talk underwater also. So that doesn't matter. Somebody just has to come up with a creative way to present this where it's not intrusive. It doesn't take you out of the movie, but it's very natural. Maybe it is telepathically, or I don't know.
And we'll just get really stoic shots of Jason looking at the other actor.
Yeah, it's all, yeah.
Swimming.
Yeah. He just communicates with his eyes. It's like blinks.
He's good at that.
Yeah, I bet he is.
maybe they'll Bane voice it.
Oh, dub everything over so that, yeah. But how do you even film that? Like, this is going to be...
That's what I'm saying. It's physically impossible.
I mean, this will be unprecedented when they ever do this.
Yeah, we'll see.
I mean, they're planning Justice League, Wonder Woman. I don't know when that movie's coming out.
Which one?
Aquaman.
Aquaman, I think it's like around 2017, 2018.
Oh. So we've got a while.
Yes. Yeah, so maybe it'll be like hologram movies by then and we'll just be there and it won't matter. Probably not, though.
Probably not.
Wishful thinking.
I wanted to get into your acting career a little bit.
Oh, sure.
Because I heard a little bit of news about, and you mentioned Second City, which is awesome. How's that going? Did you take the classes there?
About 70% of the reason I moved to Chicago was so I could attend the Second City.
Very smart.
Yeah. Well, Tina Fey went there and Meepo.
I mean, everybody fucking went there, exactly. Dude. That guy Dell, what's his name?
That guy Dell.
He founded Second City, who kind of came up with the whole style.
Del Close.
Yeah. He was really cool. And then you go in there and you see everybody's photo that's gone through there.
Yeah. Pretty much, I don't know, a ton of the actors that I admire have gone through there, including Steve Colbert, who... It's my Lord of the Rings rival. But anyway, I want to meet that man and just talk Tolkien. But so I moved up here. You have to take some kind of preliminary course before you can audition for their conservatory. It has to amount to a year's worth of improv training.
Okay.
Luckily, I have a theater degree.
Oh.
So I was able to take Improv for Actors, which condensed a year of training into an 8-week course. So then I went a few weeks ago, auditioned for the conservatory program. I'm very pleased to announce that I was accepted. And I start the 24th.
Oh, shit. Oh, that deserved it. That's awesome. Aww, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great.
Super excited.
Yeah. So the conservatory program, do they do regular, how does that work? They do regular performances during the week? Or does this get you into like the main Second City crew?
Taking the conservatory classes, be there five 8-week levels. And if you complete those, then you're eligible to actually audition for the company and the traveling stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. I've always wanted to take the Second City courses. Little known fact, I tried stand up once.
Failed.
Well, no.
Nah, I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
He has no idea. He hasn't heard the story. Here's what happened. I went one Monday. They had it like every Monday, and it was like February. And I was like, okay, you know what? I went, I watched them, people had cards in their hands. I was like, I could do this. I can make people laugh. It's fun. I was like, all right, I'm going to come back. I'm going to do this. I put my name down, and then the slots filled up, and they're like, dude, I'm sorry, come back next week. I'll give you like 3 extra minutes. I was like, all right, fine, that's fine. So I come back the next week. I'm like, great, I got a slot. It happened to be February 14th, Valentine's Day.
Oh.
So I was in an empty room doing jokes that I just wrote to like 4 or 5 comedians. In my defense, they laughed at a couple of the jokes.
Oh, well, there you go.
So that was cool. But I was like, God damn it. Why? I was like, if I had a room of regular fucking drunk people, I could have fucking made them laugh. I would have had something to work off of, at least some energy, you know, to like feel. But I was like, and this was like 10 years ago. I never went back.
It's not for everyone.
No. This podcasting shit is a lot easier because you can just do whatever. And then if it sucks, you cut it out.
Yeah, exactly.
In another life, you could have been like Aziz Ansari or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, the Kumail Nanjiani, like they're all some great Indian. Actually, I went with a guy in high school who is kind of, he's like a Muslim comic now, Azhar Usman. He's doing a show. He's open for Chappelle. Like he knows a lot of people. Nice. So there's a lot of great brown comedians, let's say. I'm not brown. I should be.
You're
that's
white.
That's another story.
I heard all about it, actually.
Yeah, that's for a whole other podcast. Stephen Colbert is actually starting a podcast.
I will listen to it.
Yeah. And he, you know what? He's going to take over the number one spot like that. Yeah. Like, people are kind of like, God damn it. Now I got another thing to compete with because all these big people are getting into podcasting. And then it shoots to the top because they have a built-in audience. I mean, it's the smartest thing he could do.
It's like, damn you, Colbert.
Yeah. Hopefully, by the end of this, I'm going to give you the podcast bug. And I think you are very well-spoken. You should have a show. It's very easy.
Well, that's what my panelists keep telling me. They're like, do you have anything we can listen to? And I'm like, no.
See, look, you have a built-in audience. You skyrocket to the top of the charts. We started this. Nobody knows who the fuck we are still. You are, people are asking you for a podcast. You should really think about it. It's a great way to promote the convention, yourself, get yourself out there.
They're about to blow up in the Philippines, though.
That would be great.
We're huge in the Philippines, by the way.
I heard.
It's very random. And in Northumberland. Shout out to Northumberland.
What's up, Northumberland?
Anthony, they sent us a promo finally.
I heard.
I might play it, maybe.
You probably should. You might play it. We'll decide later if we play your promo, Northumberland guys.
No, but I've been asking them for so long. You know what? We're talking about them. I might just have to play it now because there's this podcast in Northumberland, the UK, 365 Flicks Podcast. They are our doppelcasters. They are like if we were in an alternate universe, were born in England and this show started there, that's us.
Oh, wow.
It's really weird. We talk about the same shit, and we've had this, like, long, ongoing, slow conversation just over our podcasts.
Definitely promote them, then.
Where, all right, well, check it out, y'all.
Put that coffee down.
Calling all film fans, want to add a little more fun to your podcast diet? Well, why not listen to the 365 Flicks podcast? We're the lads from Smallville, UK.
We love to bring you the latest news, our own special brand of meaningless movie nonsense, as well as a bunch of top fives you really won't care about.
I'm Kev.
I'm Chris.
We're Pissy.
We're fanboys.
We're having another beer.
We are the 365 Flicks podcast.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Podomatic, and many, many others.
Also look for us on musingsofageek.com and wickedradionetwork.com.
Sick of listening to all those overpaid movie critics?
Then tune into the 365 Flicks podcast, your vocal heroes of pissy opinion.
I like them. They like us. We got like a podcast bromance going on. And you guys, good job on that promo. And for finally.
Sounds good.
Yeah, send it out everywhere. They played ours a couple of times. I'll give you a couple of plays, a couple of shows coming up. So
they just gave the listener.
Yeah, see? There you go. That's all it takes. It's that easy, Danielle. You should start a podcast. I'm going to have water to start a podcast. Do you want to mention your Tumblr?
Oh, yeah, Tumblr's mostly a way for me to kill time, but it's become an easy way for people to get in touch with me after the shows, because a lot of the time we touch on topics that they want more than 50 minutes of discussion on. So I've got a little card, and, you know, it's got my email, and, you know, or you can go to Tumblr and talk to me. So it's fleeingshangri-la.tumblr.com or fleeingshangri-la@gmail.com. Feel free to talk to me. I am not afraid of strangers.
That's awesome. We'll have those links in the show notes for you guys.
Super accessible.
I am, yeah.
This is why you need a podcast. I keep thinking about the access you have to these people and like the little quick interviews. Like, your podcast would be awesome. It would be like Behind the Con with Danielle or something, like Behind the Comic Con. Oh my God. Inside the Comic Con. I'm already.
Yeah. You can like interview, like if you could like have like mini conversations with people, like you don't have to have like a hour long show. It could be like 5 minutes.
There's no five rules. It could be anything.
Well, a lot of the time they have gag orders or, you know, there are certain things I can't talk about. Like we had, Jenna Louise Coleman from Doctor Who.
Okay.
And someone wanted an interview because they'll bring cameras to the cons and they have their own little mini shows or podcasts or whatever. And she wasn't allowed to. BBC is a really tight leash on their actors. So it'll, you know, it depends on the actor. Plus, we're asking a lot of them these weekends that they come see us.
That's true.
So.
So well, you could ask them, like, what's their favorite snack or something.
That's
like
what I'm saying. Can she talk about other things? Was she not allowed? Yeah. So just ask questions about, hey, what'd you have for lunch today? I don't know.
Yeah, Billy West, what do you think of the government?
And say it as the guy from Futurama.
That's a loaded question.
Oh, he talked about it in his panel at Indianapolis. He's got some opinions.
Do it as Bender. Does he get that a lot?
Well, Joe DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio is Bender.
Yeah, but
what's his opinions?
I wasn't in the panel. That's the only real downside to running my department is I don't get to see their big celebrity panels most of the time. I've seen like two, and they were both Game of Thrones, which is great. Yeah, but. Most of the time, I'm like, all right, I'll see you later. Go to the panel. I have to go handle this other thing. Have fun. Bye.
So. Listen, I'm a bad geek in the sense that I have to confess that I have not gotten into Game of Thrones yet.
It happens.
It's not going anywhere.
Can you talk about Game of Thrones? Because I haven't gotten into it.
Dude, I heard And in fact, Kevin Smith just said, he goes, look, just go watch this last episode. He goes, if you haven't seen it, fuck the rest of it. This is
what
a great.
What season are we on?
There, so five? There was like they just had, was it the season finale or it was just like a big episode?
You know, I don't know. I haven't, I want to binge watch it. So I haven't watched any of this season.
The way he described it, and I don't know the season, but, or the show, he goes, don't worry about anything else. Watch this episode. It grabs you by the balls and it doesn't let go. And it's awesome.
That's what I've heard.
I don't know what the fuck happened.
And you still grab me by the balls.
Yeah, it's just it's just a lot more precise. Yeah. I don't know.
It's definitely worth it. I'd read the books first.
Really?
Yeah, they're amazing.
Really?
Well, there's a lot of detail that's lost, inner monologues, things like that, that make more certain characters more sympathetic than they are in the show.
Mm. I'm glad you bring that up because it goes to a good segue where I wanted to talk about the fact that you read Sandman once a year.
Every year.
That is awesome, by Neil Gaiman. Now, it's 75 issues. Do you read all of it, or do you pick like a story arc and read that or go through?
I'll do one of two things. This year, I'm doing the second thing. But most years, because I have all of it, my first serious relationship in high school decided I needed to read it, so he bought me all of them.
Nice.
Just all of 10. I think it's 10.
Yeah, it's 10 trade paperbacks.
What a guy.
Yeah. I was like, that's a lot of money, dude. You're 18. But anyway, so I read it, fell in love with it, and normally I'll just, you know, if I'm between novels, because I go through books like water, I'll just, all right, it's Sandman time, and I'll pick it up, and I'll just go through the whole thing. Or years like this year where I'm just a little too busy to do that, I'll just kind of grab an issue every now and then. And
that's cool. Wait, I think I jumped ahead to Sandman too quick. I still want to know more about – I honestly wanted to know about more about Second City.
Oh.
Yeah, let's go talk about Second City then.
Yeah, Second City is awesome. How are the classes then? Have you started?
No, I start the conservatory next week. I've done the –
Oh, you did the conservatory. What do you guys do in the – it's just more of like a hands-on
– Yeah, it's – I think it's building more on the improv foundations, because Second City's real mission is to get you to be able to improv, to turn it into sketch comedy for things like, you know, SNL, that kind of thing. So I think we're just honing the skills and learning more. I don't know. It's five terms and I'm really excited about it. But what I learned, all the, you know, the foundations of improv, I think we're going to be building on those and getting more detailed.
Is there a lot of writing, or this is more of just practicing the craft actually?
I think because there are three different conservatory programs. From what I understand, there's improv, musical improv, and then the writing program. So I'm pretty sure we're just performance-based.
Okay.
So the writers take what you do and they make it cohesive.
They fatten it out a little bit.
Yeah.
How do you get good?
Practice.
Just practice.
Lots of practice. Yeah.
Lots of improv, man. You just got to do it all the time. Have you heard of Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind?
Yeah, actually, we did it. In college.
Oh, what do you mean you did it? Oh, was it official, like through them, or you just did?
No. Yeah, we got the rights, and really? we had a group do it. So I've seen, you know, the University of Central Florida's version of it. It's really cool. I want to go see it here because holy shit, neo-futurist! I'm in Chicago.
Yeah, so I'll have to explain to the listener because this
and to me
and to you. So this to me, this takes me back to high school. Is when I first discovered them. So they've been doing this since the. Late 80s, early 90s, right? So it's they're called the Neo Futurarium, and it's above a funeral home, which is awesome. And the show is called Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind. Now, here, I don't even know how to describe it. Here's the experience you get when you walk in. First of all, to get in, you pay like a roll of a die plus a certain, they keep like $5. So everybody's paying something different. It's a lot of fun. This is how they used to do it. I haven't seen it in a while. I don't know if they changed it. Then you walk in and there's a lady there and she's got headphones on with really loud music. And she's like, hi, what's your name? And you tell her your name and then she writes down whatever the fuck she wants to write because she can't hear you. And then you put the name tag on. And then you enter into the performance area, which is really, it's a black wall. Hardwood floors, there's no props, and then it's just bleachers, just seats, right? They hand you a menu with 30 titles on it. And you're like, what's this? And you go and sit down, and then you notice, you look up, there's a rope across the top. Clothesline to this rope is written 1 to 30 on 30 pieces of paper. And you're like, okay, what's going on here? Then the show starts. They come out. First of all, they do a fun thing where if they sell out, they order out. So if they sell out, they order a pizza right there. And it's just one pizza, cut into little tiny pieces.
Yep.
That usually shows up halfway through the show and they pause and they bring it and you get to eat it afterwards. It's really fun. But in 60 minutes, this is how it works. It's so fucking cool. In 60 minutes, they will go through as many of those 30 plays, their short skits, as they can, as people yell them out. So they're like, we're going to press this timer. Everyone yell out a number. They hit the timer. Everyone yells out a number. The one guy who's in charge, whatever first number he hears, he jumps up, pulls the number down, reads the title. He goes, okay, blah, 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 go. So they have to set up for random, 30 random sketches in an instant. And they go, and then they, when it ends, they go, curtain. Everyone yells out another number. And then they just grab a thing and they go. And they do this for an hour. Sometimes they get through all of them. They usually get through most of it. But I love when they get through all 30. It's fantastic. But it, and then at the end of the show, they every weekend they would roll a die Saturday and Sunday. They would add those numbers together. That's how many new skits they would write for next week and cut. So they're and this is not their day job.
No, no. It's a lot of dedication.
It is amazing. They're constantly writing. You'll never see the same show twice. You could go once a month. It's a completely fucking different show. It is amazing.
Yeah. I want to see that.
Dude, it's so much fun. And like we used to go in high school all the time, and then I went back, you know, in my adulthood, and it was still fun. I was like, wow, man, we used to, and it's the shit. It's just, it's very unique. I've never seen anything like, I know they have a crew in New York now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, where did you say down there? They give you permission.
Yeah. We, at UCF, University of Central Florida, we would host a entirely student produced, directed, acted in, et cetera, one act festival. And one of the directors submitted that. She said, you know, I got permission from Too Much Late, or to do Too Much Late Makes a Baby Go Blind. She's like, yeah, do it. Have fun.
That's awesome.
So we got
to do it. So you got to do it?
I wasn't in it. I was running the festival. I have a long history of running festivals and stuff like this.
So did they write their own stuff, or they were given the pieces?
I don't remember exactly how they did it. I think they pulled from like the original 60.
There's a book too. Yeah. I have the book of like 100 plays.
Yeah. I think they pulled from that. And because they only got I think they got a 60-minute slot, but they were only able to get through like 27.
So these short plays, they're all over the place. Some of them are funny, punchline setup joke. Some are very abstract and ethereal. Some are heartwarming and almost make you cry. But these guys pull so much emotion in 1 to 2 minutes. It's unbelievable. Just with sound, with lighting cues, minimal props. They'll pull out chairs here and there.
Yeah.
But there's no background. There's no set. It is so good. I mean, highly recommended. If you guys are in Chicago, check it out. I will link to their website in the show notes. Jockinder.com/17. And, you know, to just talk about how really talented you are, Danielle, like you're also a visual artist.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a jack of all trades, which means I'm currently making money doing none of it.
Well, you know, that's a typical creative. I'm a little bit that way, too. I love to draw. I love web design. I like playing my guitar. I love music. I kind of love like performance. Like, I don't know what to do. You know, podcasting, this is why, again, I'm going to encourage podcasting, because really it combines, when I started doing this, I was like, this combines all the shit I'm into one thing. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah, it's the most fun thing I've done. But I'll have a link to your Behance portfolio, just because I want to talk about some of these artworks. You have a series of bookmarks, Harry Potter?
Yes.
Themed bookmarks. What medium do you like to work in? This looks like color pencil?
Yeah, it's actually a mixture of Prismacolor pencils, Prismacolor markers, and then a little bit of touch-up in Photoshop. I actually made them. I only printed 10 of each bookmark, and they were specifically for Indiana Comic-Con.
Nice.
Yeah. It was a Fund Flea's Next Drink sale, so I sold out and funded my drinking that weekend.
I mean,
what kind of drinks did you get?
I strictly drink beer.
Oh, you're like craft beer?
Yeah. I mean, well, in the East Coast, we have a brewery called Yingling, which is not craft.
Oh, I know Yingling. We know Yingling.
Yeah, so that's, you know, when I'm on the cheap, that's as cheap as I'll go, and I miss it terribly when I'm not in Chicago.
You know what? I know people who get it shipped in from people.
I'm not that desperate because I do prefer craft beer.
Yeah.
But it's really, in Indianapolis, it was kind of whatever I could get my hands on. So that weekend, I think I was drinking like, I don't know, Killian's or something. No, never Bud Light. Never.
Good. I see. She's got taste. Shit, we should have played the fucking Beer Trail podcast promo.
I was kind of like hinting at that.
There's another promo stop we do. It's called the Beer Trail podcast. And this guy just talks to craft brew owners.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And like independent breweries, like
you could talk about fucking anything on podcasts.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. That's the thing, is the more niche you get, the more audience you will find. because it's the beauty of this whole thing. It's so much fun. I'm telling you, yeah. By the end of this, you're going to want a podcast.
And I'm going to have a list of new podcasts to listen to.
You can literally record it on your phone and publish it. Like, just, literally.
There we go.
Yeah, no, it sounds good. Like, that's how the barrier for entry due to technology and the rise of this iPhone and just smartphones in general has made it so easy for people to find and become podcasters. Is that your favorite medium? You like mostly pencil?
Yeah, my focus, because I was an art minor, and my focus was drawing. But yeah, I enjoy dry mediums just because I tend to enjoy working in weird places. I just bought a drafting table. We'll see if I actually use it. But I enjoy painting. It's just kind of a lot of work to get it all out, where I have a mobile pencil case with all 150 odd colors that Prismacolor makes, and I can just take it anywhere.
Yeah, that's great. I love this other piece that you have on your hands. It's a portrait of describe it for the listener. You can check the show notes. It's a dude with two ferrets in his little wearing armor. But you were telling me a little bit about this before.
Yeah, so I have been on Reddit for a long time, and I was thinking about getting ferrets after my rats pass away, but I need to step away from caged animals for a while. So I'm subscribed to Our Ferrets, and this guy posted, and it was just him standing in his kitchen in like a sweater, but he's holding his ferrets.
Aww.
And I was like, dude, you are badass. Yeah. Can I draw you? And he's like, sure. And so I drew him, and then he posted it before I could and got all the karma.
Is he wearing like armor underneath, like Aquaman?
He is, although he wasn't in the photo.
No, he looks like a badass medieval knight dude, like an updated medieval knight. Like, it's a great drawing.
Oh, thanks.
It is pretty good.
Yeah. No, and like, everything starts with drawing. Like, whether you're going to paint, whether you're going to sculpt, you have to have very decent drawing skills. Everything starts with a piece of paper and a pencil.
Yeah, and for me, that was 4 semesters of drawing the same 50-some-odd-year-old naked man.
Yeah. No,
Is that really something that happens?
Yeah, oh,
life
yeah.
Life drawing,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. I could tell you stories, dude. We had large, obese woman, like very large, which, you know what? People got the best drawings from her because it was all beautiful, fluid, huge arm movements, and with a couple of curves, you saw her come out. Like, that was the easiest, surprisingly. Then we had this old guy who would stand on his head.
What the hell?
This one other dude came dressed in, like, boxer shorts.
And there was, like, this is normal?
Oh, yeah. There was a really old woman. Or maybe the woman stood on her head. I've seen some interesting models, but it's always fun drawing them. Like,
oh, yeah. They're great.
Listen, drawing from life and figure drawing is the best way to learn. You learn the most just by drawing from life.
Yeah, and I still do it. Not so much with the naked. I'll just sit in a coffee shop and creep on people.
No, I do the same. I drew Anthony's friend when we went to see Captain America, Irwin. And then Irwin came on the show, and I was like, how do I know you? And he goes, you drew him. I was like, oh, yeah. But you can go. There are figure drawing for $15, like 2-3 hour sessions that you can go. There's one actually near the other Ravenswood and the ELS train.
Oh,
but
yeah?
It's every Sunday morning. And every week I mean to go, and I've never made it.
Yeah, I'm bad at mornings.
They sell newsprint pads and equipment, and you can go, and there's a model, and you pay $15 and you spend like the whole day drawing the model.
Oh, that's delightful.
Yeah, it's
you
great.
You walk in like not knowing what kind of model. And, like,
no, yeah, it doesn't.
Like, is it like pervs walking in, like hoping to draw like a hot girl and then get an old man?
It's never, but first of all, it's never a hot girl.
Yeah.
Never.
Actually.
Oh, I think I hear a story coming up. Okay, let's go.
Well, there's a company called Dr. Sketchy. And they exist, I think they were based in New York, but they exist here in Chicago, and they hold them, I think it's only like bi-weekly or every other month or something that they hold them, and they have people come in amazing costumes. They'll have different themes like, you know, steampunk or burlesque or superhero, and it's usually pretty attractive people that they have. I mean, no one's naked most of the time.
Well,
but
if they're clothed, yeah, it could be a hot girl. Rarely do you find a nude model. Yeah.
Why do you get like old men then? That
because they need money and they don't pay a lot to these models.
Okay.
It's cheap labor. They just literally have to stand there for 4 hours. You make like $50 or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's a lot of people who don't have work or just like they just need some quick cash. That's why I think it's always very odd choices for like, why are you doing this? You're 90 years old.
Yeah, but it's cool because you get some interesting shapes out of it.
Yeah. That large woman, the large woman, she came around everyone, and she was so funny. She's like, see, all you needed was a big woman to get your drawings. And she would go around compliment everybody. But I got to say, I had some of my best drawings with her with her sessions. It was very weird. Have you tried drawing digitally yet?
Yes, I'm learning right now, actually. I've had an Intuos tablet from Wacom since I was like 17, but I'd started subscribing to, and I say subscribing, you don't pay anything. It's called Control Paint.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's amazing.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, I'm just learning all from him, but it's slow because I'm busy all the time.
Once you get into that, it's a lot of fun. I almost exclusively do digital art, like those heads I drew on this. This is a drawing tablet. This is actually Wax. So you know how Wacom sells their Cintiq?
Yeah.
It's like $2,000. It's completely unaffordable for anyone just wants to check it out.
Yeah.
This is made by a company called Yinova. It's 19 inches. It costs $600.
That is much more doable.
And it works just as good. Now, there's more of these companies that are trying to break into the field and make it competitive for Wacom because they're only charging that much because they can.
Yeah, they're it. I mean, mine, I had the baseline for when it came out, and it was still like $400.
It's quality.
Yeah.
But they're getting away with that high price point because nobody else is making shit. They have a 22-inch that's only $900. It's awesome. I drew a whole comic book on the screen.
That's fantastic.
And then so my other recommendation for you is to look up this software called Manga Studio.
Oh, I know Manga Studio.
Manga Studio is amazing.
I haven't used it. Right now I'm doing Photoshop and I'm going to try with Paint Tool Sai. I've heard a lot of good things.
That's good. But your work here, this color pencil drawing, definitely check out Manga Studio. It's only like $100.
No, that's not bad.
And you buy these certain brushes from these guys who make awesome brushes. It's unbelievable. Like, you can't tell. And I like it because it's less messy. I'm very messy. I used to spill fucking India ink all over the floor all the time. Because I would be inking comic book pages with a quill pen and India ink.
All over the place.
Oh, my God. In my condo, like, before I sold it, I had to scrub the black India ink dots out of the floor. I was like, oh, why did I do this? This is a lot cleaner, this right here.
Yeah, a little bit easier.
No mess. I love it. It's awesome. And then the swing arm just helps. Like, I can put it anywhere, position it, draw it.
Nice.
It's great.
Really nice.
Yeah. Anyways, if anybody is into digital drawing, I'll post links to these things and I'll put a little photo of this thing in the show notes, shockandnerd.com/17.
Cool.
Whoop.
Before we get back to Sandman, Danielle, Sunday, Anthony and I are recording our first show on location at our comic book store
awesome. In
Niles. We don't know what the fuck's going to happen.
No idea.
This, like, 2 days from now?
Yes!
Yeah. Oh,
that's so cool.
So the idea is we're just going to interview people. The hook was, come on down, see how a podcast works, be on the show. Like, if you want to sit down and talk about what you love, what comic book, fine. You know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you'll be on the show.
Huh.
Now, I wanted to ask you, having run events, and it's not completely different, do you have any advice? Because I haven't found any on the internet.
Do a sign-up sheet.
Ah, I got that.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm good. See?
Oh, shit.
I'm on top of that. All right, next. Because that way, I'll have their email and their Twitter, and then I can let them know the show's up, and then they will tell their friends, and then everyone will come and listen.
Well, also, if you get a big turnout, like my first, and we'll get into this story, but like my first panel was way more people than I expected.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so I was unprepared. But
you can tell that story now, too, if you want.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a funny story about how I even got into this. So my friend that works at the shows with me, she organizes and schedules all the panels, and she last year, 2014 TampaCon, she's like, I don't have enough, would you do a couple panels? And I'm like, fine, thinking I would hate it. I don't know why I thought I would hate talking for an hour, but whatever. So I was like, no one's gonna show up anyway, whatever. So we had gotten dinner and my panel was supposed to be like 9 o'clock, and of course at a convention you have bars everywhere in the convention center selling you. So I was like, I'll just grab a beer, pop my head and be like, oh, no one's here, all right, see you later, I'm gonna go drink.
Boy.
So I bought a beer, walked in, and I'm like, there are like 40 people in here, is this the right room? And I looked, I'm like, yeah, it says pan, okay. And I pop my head and I'm like, hey, are you guys here for this panel? They're like, yeah, we're just waiting on the guy. I was like,
shit.
Oh shit, that's me. And I was already like a beer deep, and then I had this other 20 ounce in my hand. I'm like, all right, fuck it, let's do it. And so Flea Drinks and Does Stuff panel series was born.
That's where the title comes
from. Okay. So now I always have at least one beer with me when I
good
show up to the
I was
panel.
Gonna say, and it's probably a Yingling, isn't it?
When I'm in Florida, absolutely, that's all I'm drinking.
It takes the edge off.
It really does.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like that for everything. Like, but you have to.
Alcohol's the best.
But you can't go over the line because it very quickly goes from, oh, I'm loose and ready to, oh, fuck, what did I do?
Yeah, well, I have a pretty high tolerance because I exclusively drink it, so I know where that line is. But I only do two per
just to get you loosey goosey. That's good. That's good.
You don't want to be like. Yeah, you're right. You don't want to be like at the point where you think you're really funny, but you're really just obnoxious and drunk.
Yeah. Well, also sometimes I touch on pretty serious topics. So for those, I try to stay a bit, you know, more on point. But for like my other one for Tampa, we're doing a Hogwarts Battle Royale. So it's like I can be as weird as I want.
You need to drink mead for that one.
Okay. Well, it's going to be
great. Is there a Harry, what's the drink in Harry Potter world?
Well, they have butterbeer, which is non-alcoholic in the parks, but they also have a couple of different brews that are specific to Wizarding World of Harry Potter. They've got the, I don't know, it's a couple of Wizards Brew and Dragon something, and they're pretty good.
Yeah. That's the fictional drink.
Fire whiskey. Sorry, you're talking about fire whiskey in the books. Okay. Yeah.
I read the first Harry Potter. I did want to ask
Fireball.
It's like Fireball.
Fireball's whiskey.
It's probably not as nasty as fucking Fireball.
Probably not. Yeah.
What is your reaction to this statement? The fact that is Harry Potter not just the X-Men?
It's not.
Follow me here.
Okay.
In the X-Men, there's humans, and then there's mutants. Mm-hmm. Okay. And in the mutants, there's good mutants. There's a school for good mutants. There's bad mutants. There's kind of a group for bad mutants. Now, the humans are just discriminated against the mutants. Mm-hmm. Does this not at all sound familiar?
Only the most basic level. Because the difference is wizards are still human.
Oh, they're muggles?
Well, muggles just a non-magical person. But
muggles
wizards are still
non-magic. Okay.
Yeah. And they're...
No, but see, that there's the magic people and the non-magic. There's a little discrimination there, isn't there? There's a little tension.
There is a difference. But, well, most non-magical people don't know that wizards exist.
Okay. Oh, so it's not like a thing like anti-mutant propaganda like in the X-Men.
No, most of the non-wizarding community... Like, the idea is like we exist right now, but there's a secret wizard world.
Okay. Listen, what? All right. That's actually, you're the first person to defend that.
How do you
properly.
Find out about that wizard world?
You have to be one.
Yeah, you have to be a wizard.
You got to be invited in.
Or you have to be the Prime Minister of England.
I'm sorry. I've never read Harry Potter.
You never seen any of the movies? The movies are fun.
Like the fifth one and I didn't understand what was going on.
Oh, no. Don't watch the movies.
Or the sixth one. I'm sorry. The sixth one.
Nope. Don't. Nope. Those movies are awful.
Okay.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Oh, shit. I was going to add, I read the first book. What's the best book if you had to recommend one out of all of them?
Four.
Okay.
For me personally, it tied at books 4 and 6. But as far as action and seeing a lot of the world and the cool shit that's in it.
Yeah.
Four, Goblet of Fire.
Goblet of Fire.
Yeah. Now, what is the least worst Harry Potter movie?
Also 4.
Okay, that makes sense.
And it was still pretty terrible. And they added David Tennant, and I love David Tennant. I still hated the movie.
He's going to be Purple Man and Jessica Jones on Netflix.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a lot of Doctor Who connections in the superhero world. That's why I think you'll like Arrow, because it has, what's the guy's name who plays Merlin? John Barrowman.
John Barrowman.
Oh, I love John Barrowman.
Yeah, Doctor Who people love John Barrowman. He's great on the show. He's like the big villain in the first season. So.
That's awesome.
Dude, just dive into Arrow on Netflix. Trust me, once you start watching it, you won't be able to stop until the third season, which just ended. It's whatever.
I have a couple of things in line.
I'm sure you have a lot.
And they've all been pushed aside because I'm rewatching Buffy.
I mean, so, like I said, you are the... Oh, you're rewatching. She loves...
Yeah, for like the fourth time.
You know what? J.K. Rowling was brilliant, though. What she did is...
Yeah.
Goddamn brilliant, whether it's a slightly based off. And the mutant thing is really just like race relations. Like, they got that idea from race relations.
Yeah.
So, really, there aren't any new ideas out there. It's just how you present it, package it, and bring it to a new generation.
And, you know, compelling characters help.
And good writing and characters. But, man, what she has done is brilliant. Aren't they doing a spinoff or another one?
They are making a movie based on, it was just a little teeny tiny, maybe 40-page book that she wrote years ago called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I'm pretty sure they're making a film somehow.
Is that tied into the Potter universe?
It was presented as a textbook.
Oh, in the Harry Potter universe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So it's cool because it discusses all kinds of crazy magical creatures. But I don't know how they're going to make a movie out of it.
Wow, they're making a movie out of a textbook in another movie.
From what I understand, yeah.
Wow. That's ambitious.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Just because I didn't enjoy the Harry Potter films doesn't mean that I have written off J.K. Rowling. So, you know.
Yes. Well, you should. I mean, it's not her fault, right?
No, not at all.
Dude,
no,
she is loaded. I think she's the richest person in UK right now or anywhere.
I think she actually gave up billionaire status recently because she donated so much. Oh, something nice. Like that.
Good.
I don't know.
Good for her.
I mean, I just remember the story, her telling a story of how she had this outline and she would just go to the coffee shop every day and it was this long outline and she didn't think anyone would like it or what to do with it. I'm like, why can't I come up with something like that?
Yeah.
Why did I think of something like that? What can I rip off and change and make money? No, I didn't say that. I'm kidding.
Oh, shit.
I just love aggravating the Harry Potter fan. I'm sorry. Listen, let's get back to Sandman.
Sure.
Because Anthony does not read the Sandman, and our listeners may or not, but I wanted to turn people on to
I've read Sandman. He's in a Spider-Man get comics. Out.
That's
oh, shit.
Damn, right? She told you. That's the wrong goddamn Sandman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Not the same guy, huh?
Not even the same publishing house.
Yeah, wrong company. And it's like the exact opposite. Sandman is a non-superhero comic book. It's a horror, fantasy, sci-fi. It was written by Neil Gaiman, published by DC Comics, imprint Vertigo. And they're known to publish more adult fare. It had tons of different artists on it, including Mike Drinnenberg, Malcolm Jones III, Michael Zulli. Ran 75 issues from 1989 to 1996. Every cover was by the awesome Dave McKeon. It has some of the finest covers, and it's very unprecedented in the sense that Sandman rarely appears on the cover. These covers are like art pieces.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Dave McKeon's style is a lot of tape and patchwork and found objects and very rough. Grungy drawings. It's so, like, I love Dave McKeon. Basically, this came out while I was in art school in Brooklyn is when I got turned on to this, and it blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, what is this? I just want to read this. So I actually started reading and buying it weekly as it was being published towards the end.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, and then I went back and I bought all the trade paperbacks, and it influenced my art style a lot. Like, I wanted to be Dave McKeon.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's how I was introduced to him, was through Sandman. I was like, holy shit.
Dave McKeon, yeah, he's amazing. So the main character of the Sandman is known as Dream.
Among other things.
He's also known as Morpheus. He is one of the seven Endless. They're all brothers and sisters. But they're all personifications of a concept or a feeling. For example, the other Endless are Destiny, Death, Desire, Despair, Delirium. Used to be Delight.
Great beer.
And yeah, Delirium mm-hmm. is a fucking great beer.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, Nocturne and Noel. And Destruction. So you can see by these are not your usual character names. These are embodiments of these things that we all go through, that we all experience. And Dream was able to go through people's dreams and through various times in history. It's collected in 10 trade paperbacks. It's probably the best way to experience it, because it's broken up into 10 awesome arcs. Mm-hmm. And I believe you can even get them digital through the comic apps like Comicology and DC. Was critically acclaimed. It's one of the few graphic novels ever to be on the New York Times bestseller list. I mean, it was up there with Your Mouse, with Watchmen, with Dark Knight Returns, Sandman. Norman Mailer has described the series as a comic strip for intellectuals. And that's like the best way to describe it, really.
Oh, yeah.
It's very smart. It's very, there's allusions from Greek mythology, Roman mythology, the Middle East, like all over. Like William Shakespeare is a goddamn character in the book. In fact, it's because of Dream that Will Shakespeare wrote A Midsummer Night's Dream and The Tempest.
Yeah, and the characters from Midsummer were inspired by actual characters.
Puck was like one of them. And
Titania.
I'll put a link in the show notes. I found this great article. It's the 10 best issues of Neil Gaiman's Sandman. That's one of them. That is a great issue.
It's beautiful.
It's like, if you like fantasy, like who would like this? How would you describe? I know a lot of female readers. It has a lot of female fans and a lot of people who just like alternative non-superhero comic books. Who would like this?
Anyone who wants more out of a comic than just punching and violence, because there's actually very little of that.
Yeah.
In fact, they're trying to make a film adaptation.
Ooh, I'm glad you said that because I didn't know if you knew that.
I did, and they specifically talked about how he's really trying to stay true to Gaiman's vision, and something specific that Neil Gaiman said to Joseph Gordon-Levitt was, just keep the punching to a minimum. But anyway, anyone that likes it covers so many genres. This is such a hard question.
Yeah.
It's fantasy. It's historians. They're characters. I don't know. One of the story arcs takes place during the French Revolution.
Yeah.
It goes mythology.
All through time. So Neil Gaiman wrote this as a finite run. Like, he knew where it was going to end.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he ended it when he wanted to end it. And, you know, this is a spoiler podcast. I'm just going to kind of spoil a little bit. Part of the storyline is Dream dies.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's yet another storyline about after what happens after, you know, Dream is gone and his funeral.
And it's kind of...
His son takes over?
No, it's a new aspect of him. It's still him.
Right.
But it's not him because that's how they're endless.
Right. Oh, so, it keeps going. Yeah. Are you aware of the new series?
I heard something about it and I don't know how I feel.
It's called Sandman Overture. It's taking a really long time to come out. There's only 5 issues and
it's like... Is Neil Gaiman involved in that?
Yeah. Oh, Neil Gaiman's writing it. And it's it's a prequel. You know, so the book basically the book was based on a character from the 70s that was actually created by Jack Kirby, who's created the Avengers, big Marvel guy. In the 70s, it was a Silver Age version of this guy, Sandman. Now, Neil Gaiman actually wanted to use that character. However, the company that owned the rights was using it or something. They're like, DC's basically like, look, you can have the name. That's about it. And Neil's like, fuck, all right. So he goes back and he comes up with this pale, really cool, goth, pale face, skinny person, dark hair, you know, eyes reversed where the pupil is white and the whites are black.
Actually, it doesn't even have pupils.
It doesn't have pupils. It's
like two, it's described as like points of starlight.
Yeah, like you could get lost in there. You don't want to look in there. In fact, even his dialogue box is reversed.
Yep.
It's a white text with a black box. You always know it's Dream. And I've always, in my head, I always heard like a crazy haunting, like, ethereal, like that's what his voice would be. You know, I'm really curious about this movie, how they do this.
Yeah, he's a very interesting character. And actually, one of the only people that I've met that didn't like it was my best friend. So this is a point of contention between us.
Oh, no.
Why?
She didn't like the way it ended. She has a problem with Neil Gaiman's endings in general, which I don't.
Yeah.
I think it was just not climactic enough for her. But
Is he known for certain endings or?
No, he's not all about fireworks all the time.
No, and it's because it's a huge story arc. He's not like a cliffhanger guy. Mm-hmm. This is literature.
Yeah.
This is characters, life and death and what goes on around them. Books don't always, life doesn't have a clean ending.
Exactly.
You know, and it represented that. One of my favorite issues is issue 50 entitled Ramadan. Do you remember this one?
Because I've only read them as the trade paperbacks.
Yeah, it's kind of a standalone story. It deals with he's in ancient times in Baghdad, and it's all the art by P. Craig Russell is gorgeous. It's ornamental, simplified art, lots of border decorations, inspired by Middle Eastern art and like the illuminated texts from the Middle Ages. And basically, it's this this Arab king.
I love that one. Talking, I just read that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Talking to Dream about, you know, how do I keep my city going forever?
Yeah, it's so perfect.
It is, first of all, the title Ramadan, because I grew up Muslim and I'm in art school. And then I find this awesome series. And then I find that one of the books is called Ramadan. I was like, this is the most amazing. I love fucking Neil Gaiman. This is the most amazing thing. Now, the reason I mention this is to show you how he had pre-planned this whole story arc. Remember in the issue at the end, it ends with that snow globe?
Mm-hmm.
The city's in the snow globe. If you go back to the first issue, Sandman number one, there is a panel where there's a trunk. Like right when he gets freed, there's a trunk of items. In that trunk is that snow globe, amongst other things that show up all later. The way through the story. And I was like, wow, he fucking thought this whole thing out. And I had never seen that before in a comic book. This such attention to detail and continuity.
And the more times you read it, the more little details like that you pick up.
The rereadability of these 10 trade paperbacks is amazing. Like it means more. It's the first thing that it means more. Every time you read it, you love it more. You're like, I forgot how awesome this is.
Yeah. And it always leaves me feeling different after each read through, which is nice because I think it reflects well on how you're changing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, every time I read it, I'm a little different.
Yeah. It's very, I mean, it's adult. It's like, it's the same way when I read Watchmen when I was like 13, I didn't get it. I was like, all right. And then I read it again and I was like, oh, like recently I was like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah. It was the same experience for me.
13-year-old is not going to get that. What, do you have a favorite story arc in Sandman?
Oh, it's really hard to choose.
There's so many good ones.
Yeah. I tend to enjoy kind of the snippets and then the tiny ones where Dream isn't even really there.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I really love. There's one about it's a grandfather telling his granddaughter a story about the old country and their people. Yeah. And you don't, spoiler, you don't realize until the very end of it. You kind of start to get an inkling, but then at the very end he confirms that he's talking about himself and he's some crazy cool kind of wolf guy. And it's,
yeah.
Those little things are, you can kind of see Dream's minor influence, or he's just kind of passing through and he's not even really a character in it.
Yeah, I prefer the earlier arcs. I mean, I kind of agree with your friend. The way it ended, it wasn't, I didn't really connect that. Like, I love the first couple of trade paperbacks are really strong. Well, it was just weird that he died and it kept going on. And I was like, okay, let's go. Where's this going?
Yeah, the first time I read it, it left me feeling very melancholy. But, and every time I read it, I never come away from it happy. Yeah. But you're not supposed to, I think.
No, I think
I'd like to interject real quick. Danielle, I love your vocabulary.
Thank you.
Melancholy. Delightful.
This is why she should have a podcast.
Well, I just spent the last year working as a copywriter, so
she's making us sound better. You realize that, Anthony, right?
She's making us sound stupid.
You just brought this up to another level, this podcast. That's why you should have your own.
No, then get two beers in me, like, because then my panel's like halfway through each panel I'm just like, and you know what, fuck them. And sons of business, and I just get incoherent. Oh, and
god damn.
Yeah, like, hey, the patriarchy.
Then you sound like us.
Yeah, and kind of like a pirate.
I like the, I just like the one story arc. I think it's Seasons of Mist where Lucifer, the devil, like quits.
Oh, I love that
one. And then
one.
He just like tells Dream, all right, it's all yours.
Hey, enjoy hell. Here you go.
Dream's like,
fun.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I love Lucifer Morningstar as a character. He was portrayed very well.
They're making a spinoff show, in development, I think for CBS.
Oh yeah. I heard about this.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
That's a great character.
He is. He's really cool. And he just, I don't know. He was funny, and up until that point, I'd never read anything in which the devil was likable.
Yeah.
And then now I watched Supernatural, and the devil was very fun in that show.
Yeah, that's, I was like, this is a, I mean, in the show description, it's like Lucifer's going to help the cops with, I was like, okay, that's interesting.
Sure.
Well, look, I'm going to make a podcast out of you yet. You mentioned the movie, and I have this whole bit in here.
Oh, wow, yeah.
About the movie. How about you tell our listeners a little bit about what's going on? Who's making this movie?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Oh. First of all, this should be an HBO show. Have you seen Carnival?
No.
Okay, anyways, Carnival is like, you take that tone and you turn this into a 75-episode, like, how many seasons is that? 8-season HBO series, like if it was 13 episodes. Anyways, this would be an awesome HBO. The problem with adapting this is, what part of the 75 multiple story arc do you take to present this properly?
Yeah, it's hard to hook people.
Yeah.
You know? And then you also have to take into account the ending, because, you know, people don't tend to rally behind endings that don't fit into a certain, you know, style.
Like,
I see that being a huge challenge, and not having read Sandman, but 75 issue story arc into a movie?
Yeah.
Like, how the hell, and then how do you please, like, the fans with that? Like, what arc do you choose, unless you're making, like, two or three movies, right?
It's going to be hard.
Yeah. It's not a typical, I mean, I bless him for trying this. Like, it's been tried to made several times. It's not a typical superhero movie. In this article, he says that Neil Gaiman actually said to him, he said, don't have any punching. Because he never does. If you read the comics, Morpheus doesn't punch anybody. Mm-mm. That's not what he does.
No. Yeah, Danielle mentioned that too.
Yeah.
Other people may punch here and there, may get violent. He never, ever, not once.
No, there's
does.
No punching. There's serial killers and lots of
eyeball
death
eating.
And killing and eyeball eating. And one guy has teeth in it for eyes. And he's always creeped the shit out of me, the Corinthian.
Oh, I love him.
Oh, my God. That guy. Like, that is a nightmarish image. Like,
well,
so,
he is literally a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah. And it did give me nightmares. So, like, this great horror. Like, the visuals are great. And I think JGL is a good choice for this. I think he gets it. He's asking the right questions. He's trying to make the right movie.
Mm-hmm. And he's coming at it from a unique perspective. I don't know if he intends to direct or is he just writing it or whatever he's doing.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what his exact.
I saw his movie Don John.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Which he wrote.
Yeah.
No, it was Don John.
Oh, it's Don John. It was okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he acts in it. I mean, it's a kind of a lewd movie, but it's actually pretty good.
He wrote that?
He wrote and directed and acted in it. It's his, like, own movie. It's, like, him and Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah. Oh, and he produced it. Yeah, he actually... Yeah.
It's about him being, like, this guy that, like, gets all these girls, but he's still, like, addicted to porn. and it ends in a way that I was like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that.
Oh.
Julianne Moore's in it.
I might have to watch that if he wrote it. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting.
It also says, it says here a series almost got made into a movie, The Sandman, over a decade ago, with a screenplay that essentially transformed Morpheus into the Terminator.
Oh, God, no.
Fans were aghast, and Gaiman more so, of course. But I agree, he goes, the fact that Gordon-Levitt is taking time to consult with him on this adaptation is hopeful news. Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And another piece of news that just popped up today that totally ties into this. I saw this. It's a true story. Students, parents want college to ban Sandman, Persepolis, and more. And Persepolis is great.
I love Persepolis.
So this is fucking ridiculous. College student Tara Schultz is the latest in a long line of people to be shocked to find that Persepolis, Marjane Satrapi's graphic memoir about growing up during the Iranian Revolution, contains violence.
What?
A 20-year-old attending Crafton Hills College in Yucaipa, California, was so dismayed by the graphic content in four of the graphic novels required by her English 250 course. Official description, the study of the graphic novel as a viable medium of literature through readings, in-class discussion, and analytical assignments, that she and her parents are seeking to have them banned by the administration, you stupid idiots. In addition to Persepolis, I added that idiots part, that's not in the article, Schultz took exception to Alison Bechdel's Fun Home, the first volume of Brian K. Vaughan and Pia Guerrera's Why the Last Man, which is a great book.
It is.
And Neil Gaiman, Mike Drinnenberg, and companies The Sandman, The Doll's House, due to the depictions of sex, violence, and obscenities. Okay, this next line is where it explains everything. I didn't expect to open the book and see that graphic material within, she told the Redlands Daily Facts. I expected Batman and Robin, not pornography. You are a dummy. This is an English literature class. You fucking expected Batman and Robin for real? I mean, that's ridiculous.
I don't know if this kind of thing started while I was still in college or after I left. And maybe I just didn't notice it because I don't hang around with idiots. But how do you expect to get through a college course or life without encountering these very real things?
She's 20.
She's 20.
That generation is your generation is doomed, 20-year-olds. I'm telling you that now.
Am I a part of that generation?
No, no, not you. Actually, the generation after you, I think, even now.
I'm 27. Am I a millennial?
Yeah, because I'm 26 and I'm considered a millennial.
So is a 20-year-old considered a millennial?
I have no idea.
What's the next thing?
I don't know.
Assholes?
Yeah, I think you're right. Dumb fucks.
Dumb fucks on Twitter?
Dumb fuck.
People who are born with a smartphone already in their hand.
These babies come out with earbuds and a fucking iPhone.
Yeah.
Sigh. Well, that's depressing to say the least because pretty much everything on there, I haven't read, where is it?
You should be reading all of those things. Fun Home, I've never heard of.
That's the only one I haven't
seen. Why the Last Man, I know is really good. I've read a little bit, but I love Brian K. Vaughan. Are you familiar with Saga?
I haven't read it, I've got friends that keep beating. They're like, read Saga, and they want me to read Bitch Planet.
Oh, I heard Bitch Planet is good. Yeah. I haven't read it, but it's great reviews. Saga, get the trade paperback. I think you'll like it. I've been reading it. It's really good.
The cosplays that I've seen of it are pretty cool.
Great, very imaginative. Great artwork. It's kind of like a Star Wars meets a, I don't even know how to. Like
Who writes Saga?
Brian K. Vaughan and art by Fiona Staples. Is that her name? The art is gorgeous. Basically, it's like the story of two warring planets and one of each side, they have a baby and they take off on the run and it kind of upsets everything. But here's the thing. It's like space fantasy sci-fi, but they talk like normal people. There's tons of swearing. There's people with horns and wings and stuff. It's
awesome,
it's so good. There's like a whole race of people with TVs for heads. They're like TV heads, and it's so great. Like, it's so clever, imaginative. It's a little bit like Farscape almost.
I've heard good things. I really want to get into
definitely
it.
Definitely check out Saga. So the stupidity, fucking, I don't know what to say about this.
The stupidity of the world.
I'm upset by too much going on in the world right now. It's starting to make me feel old.
No, you feel old. Don't even start. I can't. I
get real upset. Go on like Facebook and look at like comments on like articles and stuff.
Nope, I can't. I just can't.
You'll just be like, oh my god. I don't know what social media has given a voice to people that don't deserve a voice.
Twitter is nothing but assholes.
Oh, it's all assholes.
It's unbelievable.
My uncle used to say the camera was an asshole magnet whenever they'd show the camera on like at sports stadiums and people would be waving like, oh, I'm waving on camera. But I definitely think social media is now the asshole magnet.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know where this is, like, it's not promising where all this is going. If you think about it and, you know, where's all this? I don't know.
Well, you think it's, I think actually people have always had these opinions. It's just now they get to say them.
Yeah. It's made the world a lot smaller and bigger at the, all at the same time.
Right.
It's given voice to, yeah, you're right. It's given voice to people who just were assholes.
Yeah.
So it's up to us to fight this voice. I don't have time for all this.
It's up to us, or not us, smart people, to be like, expose these people, or like, or maybe these people just expose themselves and then they realize that they're just assholes.
No, but then people, like, they do expose themselves, but I don't think people realize that they're assholes. Everyone takes it seriously.
Yeah, it's, don't feed the trolls is really what I live by.
Because, like, the knee-jerk reactionary idiot is like a whole breed of people now.
Yeah.
Like, without clicking or checking, they, you could do, the fact that you could tweet your thoughts out to the world without any kind of editing or censoring, that instantly is very dangerous, actually, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to be good. Also, I read a thing about, you know, all this data we're making. Like, we are creating more data every day than, like, the entire history of man that has been recorded.
Because of social media?
Yes, because if you think of all the posts, the tweets, the YouTube videos, we are creating so much data, and most of it is complete garbage.
You should download...
like your show, jockandnerd.com.
Hey. Yeah, right? Have you heard of the app Time Hop?
Yes.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
Why?
It takes all your tweets, Facebook posts, whatever, Instagram, and then anything on your phone, and then it puts it all together, and then it'll go 5 years ago from today. So every day you see what you wrote five years ago.
All it's doing is taking shit nobody cared about 5 years ago and making you repost it, and nobody still cares.
No, it's not reposting. It's sharing it to you only.
Oh. So you get to see the idiocy.
And then you get to look back at 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, what your thoughts were, and you realize what kind of idiot you were at that time.
Dude, imagine when the next president we vote for now, his whole life history, from pictures of him when he was a baby to everything he tweeted up until the time he becomes that is all accessible. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen. That has never happened before. But, you know, Barack Obama just got Twitter, right?
Well, if you look at, like, Shark Tank, have you watched that show?
Yeah.
And Ron, obviously, do you watch that show, Danielle?
Yeah, one of my old bosses. Well, I don't watch it regularly, but one of my old bosses was on it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
There was a guy on there, like, pitching, like, an app, or not an app, but, like, a program where you delete undesirable information about yourself. So all that stuff you think might be out there is out there, but it's deleted.
So now it's just turned into fucking Brave New World in 1984, where you're just editing the Ministry of whatever as to go to make things fit. Right. This is a very slippery, dangerous slope we're going down, people.
Yeah.
Fucking enjoy while you can. This is the golden age of whatever the fuck's going on.
Golden age of what?
Everything.
Social media?
No, the internet. Yeah. It's the golden age of the internet and podcasting, because right now this is the only place where you could say whatever the fuck you want. Nobody is paying us. We are not beholden to anyone. This is our voice, and it's given us a voice. We're now the idiots.
Yeah. I'm fine joining those ranks.
Yeah. No, this is a powerful medium, and this is
empire of stupidity.
The empire of stupidity is that's what Rugboy has dubbed us, which is a friend of ours that comes on the show.
His name is first name Rug, last name Boy.
Boy with a Y, not an I, like it sounds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. People get that wrong all the time. But this is new media, and it's going to grow, and it's going to have to fit in somewhere, and it's going to challenge mainstream media. So you, where you work in media, you need to have a podcast.
Well, I probably shouldn't talk about this. We're considering, this might happen, it might not. We might have some cameras following us around, reality TV style, like a behind the con thing.
There you go.
But we don't know if it's happening yet, I probably shouldn't even be mentioning it.
Well, that'd be a cool thing, though, just to, like, see what goes into running a huge event like that. Like, no one knows. I mean, everyone just sees the finished product.
Exactly. And it's enormous. I mean, we've got ownership, and then that's broken down into, like, we have a show manager who's amazing. He's been working conventions for years and years. We call him Coach, because he was a high school football coach for a long time. But, you know, we have him, and then there are sub-departments. Like, I had one department, and then photos another department, and then we've got a sub-show manager that handles panel scheduling, and then we've got someone else to run the game room. We have someone else just solely checking exhibitors in that are on the sales floor, and so much more.
How big is a staff on a typical convention weekend?
I don't know about typical conventions, but for us. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, we have our core staff, which I want to say has grown to about 30 people. And then we hire weekend staffers and we have volunteers. Like my department alone, I need 3 staffers per actor in addition to myself and my...
Wow.
Yeah, then we have security.
Wow.
So how many people would you estimate are working that weekend?
Oh, there are easily 100 of us. There are a lot of people.
That would make a great reality show. I'd watch that.
Yeah,
oh,
well,
my God.
We're hoping. We're hoping. I think they want to call it it's a hard con life. Which, but
that it's a hard con life.
Exactly.
For us.
That's exactly it.
I'm sorry, I sung, listener. That was unnecessary.
Yeah, you should be sorry about that.
Yeah, someone should punch me in the head.
Are you sick?
No. why do you say that? Hey, we got a bit of show news I want to get through real quick. Danielle, you want to hang out and join us?
Yeah, sure.
All right. The Jock and Nerd Podcast. Real quick, I'm not going to take up too much more of your time. The Nerd was on another podcast, everyone. I mentioned it last episode. It's out. It's episode 113 of The Weekly Jump, which you can find over at hd1jump.com, which stands for How Do I Jump, which is a great name. How many times have people played video game? And I've been asked and answered, how the fuck do I jump?
Oh, that's what that means.
That's what
now
it means.
I get
how do
it.
I jump? How do I, like, that's the first thing you say when you play Mario. You're like, how do I jump? I love the name. Anyways, it's a gaming show with a fellow named Peter Kendall, who was introduced to us by another person we know, Parviz Parvizi, who's a co-founder of this awesome app, Clamor, that we're on. Anyways, I jumped on and I kind of hung in there. My audio kind of sucked. He said it was fine, but I'm learning.
You don't know that much about games lately, do you?
Well, but here's the thing. I was like, I'll be fine because I've had a long history with video games. I've had tons of consoles, but I bailed out about 7 years ago. Now, in video game world, that might as well be fucking 50 years. Mm-hmm. The whole landscape has changed. So I'm in there throwing down old references to, like, Myst and Leisure Suit Larry, and they're talking about, like, Dark Souls and Dota and all the shit that I had to look up beforehand. They were really nice, though. Like, I felt so welcome. They really liked me. I think I hung in there pretty good. But Peter, I found out, is a huge Spider-Man fan. Now, Danielle, our last episode, which you can find at jockandnerd.com, I took the listeners through a history of Spider-Man on the small screen. I played little clips, went through from the 60s to present. It was like 11 shows. If you scroll back on your little podcast app, listener, you should find it, or you can just go to jockandnerd.com/Spidey on TV. I made it easy for everyone.
Nice.
So he has this new show called Geek Chorus, and the next show is about Spider-Man, and he wants me on that show.
That's fantastic.
So I will be doing that Sunday morning. And I'm like, Sunday morning chat, Spider-Man? How could I refuse a Sunday morning Spider-Man talk?
You'll pull out a big bowl of cereal, put on your Spider-Man jammies, and I'll talk Spider-Man.
Oh, boy. How did you know I was going to? I didn't tell you that. Fuck, he totally busted me.
Yeah.
But Peter sent me on another cool thing that you actually might like as an actor and a listener. I think you may like. It's another project he's involved with. It's called Cape Swoosh Productions. It's on YouTube. It's a YouTube channel. He writes a few very talented friends of mine produce radio dramas of famous comic books, and they have been doing really well on YouTube. They have done so far The Killing Joke. The whole thing with sound effects. I have a clip. We're going to play it. It's really good. Giant Size X-Men, and their biggest was Kingdom Come, where Peter voiced Superman.
That's amazing.
And that one has like over 30,000 views. So Killing Joke is Alan Moore's, obviously, The Killing Joke. And it aired on 90.3 FM. It's basically, it's fans produced for fans by fans out of pure love. And here is a short clip. And have you read The Killing Joke?
Not yet.
Okay.
That's the next one.
Okay.
Really good.
Okay. So for fans who have read The Killing Joke, you will know when this is. It's basically the point where the Joker has Gordon at a old rundown carnival.
Oh, no.
Heads up, Commissioner. No fair hiding your eyes on the ghost train, you old brainy cat. Oh, I know you're confused. You're frightened. Who wouldn't be? You're in a hell of a situation. But you know, life's a bowl of cherries, and this is the pits. Always remember this. Music, Sam! Welcome to Joker's Carnival!
Ah! Dude, that's pretty good.
That is really good.
I was very impressed. Like, it's a full-blown radio production. You guys, you can check it out on YouTube, Cape Swoosh Productions. I'll have a link in the show notes.
So they just do a whole comic?
Yep.
And they just, they add in all the sound effects and...
Yeah, yeah.
And do the voices. Yeah. And that's... Imran, why the fuck did we not think of that?
I know. Yeah. We need, you got to, you really have to be...
Why are we just talking?
You need, you need good voice talent. Like, that was a great Joker up there with goddamn Mark Hamill.
That's exactly who I thought. I was like, holy shit, I'm 10 again.
It was really well done. So check out the other ones, Giant Size X-Men, which is a version of 1975 Spectacular, where the new X-Men are resurrected after a five-year hiatus. That's when we first meet Storm, Cyclops, Wolverine, like the modern X-Men. And then Kingdom Come is an amazing comic series by Alex Ross and Mark Waid. And that's a really long one, and it's really good, man. I was impressed. I was like, God damn, this is good.
Well, and every single page of it is stunning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Alex Ross. I mean, look, Alex Ross.
Oh, yeah, right there. Yeah.
Right there, Alex Ross. I got a Hulk Alex Ross poster, and right behind me is, of course, Spider-Man Alex Ross. You can't do worse than that.
No, his stuff is beautiful. I aspire to be anywhere near his level of talent. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, and he's from Chicago, suburban Chicago. Yeah, so, and he did, remember he did the Oscars poster that one year?
Yeah.
Just, I love, it's great. I'll put a link to his work in the show notes too. Danielle, thank you for hanging out with us.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast.
What do you want people to know? Where can people find you? Where do you want them to do?
Easiest way to get a hold of me is either tumblr.com/fleeingshangri-la
I never have to Tumblr myself.
Yeah.
fleeingshangri-la.tumblr.com.
Or fleeingshangri-la@gmail.com if you want to talk to me directly. And I've had plenty of fans email me after shows and whatever they want to talk about, I'm happy to talk.
Cool. Listener, we'll put a link in the show notes. And if you have any questions about Comic-Cons or anything we talked about in this show, hey, if you have any kind of comment about anything, we want to hear from you. And I mean,
I mean,
not just figuratively, but literally. Now, here's how you do that. You can send us a speak pipe. Go to jockandnerd.com. There's a big red button on the side. You click it. You record your message right off your phone, your iPad, your computer, whatever, and send it, and we will get an audio comment straight from you. You can also go to speakpipe.com/jockandnerd.
That's pretty easy.
Anthony, how else can someone...
You can email us at show@jockandnerd.com. You can also tweet at us, jockandnerdcast. We're also on Facebook at The Jock and Nerd. Those are three ways, right?
Yeah, and you can find us on Clamor.
Clamor, too, yeah.
You may Jock be listening Nerd. To this on Clamor, and if you are, thank you very much. Thank you so much for coming. I know when I asked you this, I was like, oh, she's going to think this is weird. It's totally random when you come over and talk into a microphone for an hour while we record it. Like, that's kind of odd. But I knew you were very interesting and well-spoken, and I knew our listeners would dig it.
Dude, if we had more time, I would love to just hear her talk more about crap for 2 more hours.
This is exactly why you need a podcast.
If I don't get one in the works, I can just come back in a couple months. I mean, Tampa is going to be crazy.
Listen, let's do this. When you come back, you're coming back here. You're going to let us know how it went.
Sounds good, yeah.
You can stop by whenever you want.
Well, you have my schedule since your wife makes it.
That's a good point. I think the listeners will love you and would definitely love to have you back. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Thanks for coming on, Danielle.
Oh, of course. Anytime.
You guys visit jockandnerd.com/17 for the show notes, for all these links, for ways to subscribe to us in iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM. Basically, subscribe and then you'll never miss a show. It'll pop right in as soon as it comes out. It's the coolest thing ever.
Yep.
My name is Imran.
And my name is Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he's the nerd.
And we'll hear you next time. Jock and nerd!
Do you guys ever talk about anything jock-based?